Chapter 34. It's not likely they will. What I meant was, that it depends on you to spare him. Dot, she answered steadily, colon, he shall never know, and after another interval Darrow said, colon, this is goodbye, then. At the word she seemed to understand for the first time, whither the flying moments had been leading them. Resentment and indignation died down, and all her consciousness resolved itself into the mere visual sense that he was there before her, near enough for her to lift her hand and touch him, and that in another instant the place where he stood would be empty. She felt a mortal weakness, a craven impulse to cry out to him to stay, a longing to throw herself into his arms and take refuge there from the unendurable anguish he had caused her. Then the vision called up another thought, colon, I shall never know what that girl has known. Dot, and the recoil of pride flung her back on the sharp edges of her anguish. Goodbye, she said, in dread lest he should read her face, and she stood motionless, her head high, while he walked to the door and went out. Book V, XXX, Anna Leith, 3 days later, sat in Miss Painter's drawing room in the Rue de Matignon. Coming up precipitately that morning from the country, she had reached Paris at 1 o'clock and Miss Painter's landing some 10 minutes later. Miss Painter's moldy little manservant, dissembling a napkin under his arm, had mildly attempted to oppose her entrance, but Anna, insisting, had gone straight to the dining room and surprised her friend, who ate as furtively as certain animals over a strange meal of cold mutton and lemonade. Ignoring the embarrassment she caused, as he had set forth the object of her journey, and Miss Painter, always hatted and booted for action, had immediately hastened out, leaving her to the solitude of the bare fireless drawing room with its eternal slip covers and bowed shutters. In this inhospitable obscurity Anna had sat alone for close upon 2 hours. Both obscurity and solitude were acceptable to her, and impatient as she was to hear the result of the errand on which S. he had dispatched her hostess, she desired still more to be alone. During her long meditation in the white swathed chair before the muffled hearth, S. he had been able for the first time to clear a way through the darkness and confusion of her thoughts. The way did not go far, and her attempt to trace it was as weak and spasmodic as a convalescent's first efforts to pick up the thread of living. She seemed to herself like someone struggling to rise from a long sickness, of which it would have been so much easier to die. At Giveres he had fallen into a kind of torpor, a deadness of soul traversed by wild flashes of pain. But whether she suffered, or whether she was numb, she seemed equally remote from her real living and doing self. It was only the discovery, that very morning of Owen's unannounced departure for Paris, that had caught her out of her dream, and forced her back to action. The dread of what this flight might imply, and of the consequences that might result from it, had roused her to the sense of her responsibility, and from the moment when S. he had resolved to follow her stepson, and had made her rapid preparations for pursuit, her mind had begun to work again, feverishly, fitfully, but still with something of its normal order. In the train S. he had been too agitated, too preoccupied with what might next await her, to give her thoughts to anything but the turning over of dread alternatives. But Miss Painter's imperviousness had steadied her, and while she waited for the sound of the latch key she resolutely returned upon herself. With respect to her outward course she could at least tell herself that as he had held to her purpose, as he had, as people said, kept up during the 24 hours preceding George Darrow's departure, had gone with a calm face about her usual business, and even contrived not too obviously to avoid him. Then, the next day before dawn, from behind the closed shutters, where S. he had kept for half the night her dry-eyed vigil, S. he had heard him drive off to the train which brought its passengers to Paris in time for the Calais Express. The fact of his taking that train, of his traveling so straight and far away from her, gave to what had happened the implacable outline of reality. He was gone. He would not come back. And her life had ended just as he had dreamed it was beginning. as he had no doubt, at first, as to the absolute inevitability of this conclusion. The man who had driven away from her house in the autumn dawn was not the man as he had loved. He was a stranger with whom as he had not a single thought in common. It was terrible, indeed, that he wore the face, and spoke in the voice of her friend, and that, as long as he was under one roof with her, the mere way in which he moved and looked could bridge at a stroke the gulf between them. That, no doubt, was the fault of her exaggerated sensibility to outward things. She was frightened to see how it enslaved her. A day or two before, as he had supposed, the sense of honor was her deepest sentiment. If as he had smiled at the conventions of others, it was because they were too trivial, not because they were too grave. There were certain dishonors with which as he had never dreamed that any pact could be made. As he had an incorruptible passion for good faith and fairness. As he had supposed that, once Darrow was gone, once she was safe from the danger of seeing and hearing him, this high devotion would sustain her. As he had believed it would be possible to separate the image of the man as he had thought him from that of the man he was. As he had even foreseen the hour when she might raise a mournful shrine to the memory of the Darrow as he had loved, without fear that his double's shadow would desecrate it. But now as he had begun to understand that the two men were really one, the Darrow she worshipped was inseparable from the Darrow she abhorred, and the inevitable conclusion was that both must go, and she be left in the desert of a sorrow without memories. But if the future was thus void, the present was all too full. Never had blow more complex repercussions, and to remember Owen was to cease to think of herself. What impulse, what apprehension, had sent him suddenly to Paris? And why had he thought it needful to conceal his going from her? When Sophie Viner had left, it had been with the understanding that he was to await her summons, and it seemed improbable that he would break his pledge and seek her without leave, unless his lover's intuition had warned him of some fresh danger. Anna recalled how quickly he had read the alarm in her face when he had rushed back to her sitting room with the news that Miss Viner had promised to see him again in Paris. To be so promptly roused, his suspicions must have been but half asleep. And since then, no doubt, if she and Darrow had dissembled, so had he. To her proud directness it was degrading to think that they had been living together like enemies who spy upon each other's movements. She felt a desperate longing for the days which had seemed so dull and narrow, but in which as he had walked with her head high and her eyes unguarded. As he had come up to Paris hardly knowing what peril she feared, and still less how she could avert it. If Owen meant to see Miss Viner, and what other object could he have? They must already be together, and it was too late to interfere. It had indeed occurred to Anna that Paris might not be his objective point. That his real purpose in leaving Giver without her knowledge had been to follow Darrow to London, and exact the truth of him. But even to her alarmed imagination this seemed improbable. She and Darrow, to the last, had kept up so complete a feint of harmony that, whatever Owen had surmised, he could scarcely have risked acting on his suspicions. If he still felt the need of an explanation, it was almost certainly of Sophie Viner that he would ask it, and it was in quest of Sophie Viner that Anna had dispatched Miss Painter. As he had found a blessed refuge from her perplexities, in the stolid Adelaide's unawareness. One could so absolutely count on Miss Painter's guessing no more than one chose, and yet acting astutely on such hints as one vouchsafed her. She was like a well-trained retriever whose interest in his prey ceases when he lays it at his master's feet. Anna, on arriving, had explained that Owen's unannounced flight had made her fear some fresh misunderstanding between himself and Miss Viner. In the interests of peace, as he had thought it best to follow him, but as he hastily added that she did not wish to see Sophie, but only, if possible, to learn from her where Owen was. With these brief instructions, Miss Painter had started out, but she was a woman of many occupations, and had given her visitor to understand that, before returning she should have to call on a friend who had just arrived from Boston, and afterward dispatch to another exiled compatriot a supply of cranberries, and brandied peaches from the American grocery in the Champs-Élysées. Gradually, as the moments passed, Anna began to feel the reaction which, in moments of extreme nervous tension, follows on any effort of the will. She seemed to have gone as far as her courage would carry her, and she shrank more and more from the thought of Miss Painter's return, since whatever information the latter brought would necessitate some fresh decision. What should she say to Owen, if she found him? What could she say that should not betray the one thing she would give her life to hide from him? "I've her life," how the phrase derided her. It was a gift she would not have bestowed on her worst enemy. She would not have had Sophie Viner live the hours she was living now. She tried again, to look steadily and calmly at the picture that the image of the girl evoked. She had an idea that she ought to accustom herself to its contemplation. If life was like that, why the sooner one got used to it the better. But no. Life was not like that. Her adventure was a hideous accident. She dreaded above all the temptation to generalize from her own case, to doubt the high things she had lived by, and seek a cheap solace in belittling what fate had refused her. There was such love as he had dreamed, and she meant to go on believing in it, and cherishing the thought that she was worthy of it. What had happened to her was grotesque, and mean and miserable, but she herself was none of these things, and never, never would she make of herself the mock that fate had made of her. She could not, as yet, bear to think deliberately of Darrow, but she kept on repeating to herself why and by that will come to. Even now she was determined not to let his image be distorted by her suffering. As soon as she could, she would try to single out for remembrance the individual things he had liked in him before he had loved him altogether. No spiritual exercise devised by the discipline of piety could have been more torturing, but its very cruelty attracted her. She wanted to wear herself out with new pains. XXXI, the sound of Miss Painter's latch key made her start. She was still a bundle of quivering fears to whom each coming moment seemed a menace. There was a slight interval, and a sound of voices in the hall, then Miss Painter's vigorous H, and was on the door. Anna stood up as she came in. "Who found him?" "I found Sophie." "And Owen, has she seen him? Is he here?" "She's here. In the hall. She wants to speak to you." "Here now?" Anna found no voice for more. "She drove back with me," Miss Painter continued in the tone of impartial narrative. "He cabman was impertinent. I've got his number." She fumbled in a stout black reticule. "Oh, I can't," broke from Anna, but she collected herself, remembering that to betray her unwillingness to see the girl was to risk revealing much more. She thought you might be too tired to see her. She wouldn't come in till I'd found out. Anna drew a quick breath. An instant's thought had told her that Sophie Viner would hardly have taken such a step unless something more important had happened. "Ask her to come, please," she said. Miss Painter, from the threshold, turned back to announce her intention of going immediately to the police station to report the cabman's delinquency. Then she passed out, and Sophie Viner entered. The look in the girl's face showed that she had indeed come unwillingly, yet she seemed animated by an eager resoluteness that made Anna ashamed of her tremors. For a moment they looked at each other in silence, as if the thoughts between them were packed too thick for speech. Then Anna said, in a voice from which she strove to take the edge of hardness, "You know where Owen is, Miss Painter tells me." "Yes. That was my reason for asking you to see me." Sophie spoke simply, without constraint or hesitation. "I thought he'd promised you," Anna interposed. "He did, but he broke his promise. That's what I thought I ought to tell you." "Thank you," Anna went on tentatively, "he left Giver this morning without a word. I followed him, because I was afraid. Dot, she broke off again, and the girl took up her phrase. Who were afraid he'd guessed? He has. What do you mean guessed what? That you know something he doesn't. Dot dot something that made you glad to have me go. Oh, Anna moaned. If as he had wanted more pain as he had it now. He's told you this? She faltered. He hasn't told me, because I haven't seen him. I kept him off. I made Mrs. Farlow get rid of him. But he's written me what he came to say, and that was it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.